Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second session of the Shaman Visionary Circle. And I'm just going to wait a few minutes for everybody to log in. We've got a couple hundred people going up to 250, so it looks like we have everybody in. Just a couple quick announcements before we get started with Hank and Jill. The first is, this is being recorded, and if you have your video on, that is also being recorded. So if you want more privacy, or if you don't want that video on, then you can just click the video button on the bottom left and it will hide yourself. So just know that. The other is, if you can toggle between speaker mode or gallery view, and that's on the top right, and there's a little grid there. And if you press that, you'll be able to see everybody who's on the call in video mode. And if you click speaker view, then you'll get whoever we pinned to the screen. So right now it's me, and then later it will be Hank and Jill. So, and if you're on a mobile phone, to see everybody, you swipe left, I think. So I don't have the mobile phone. Another quick announcement is, if you need any support, you can email us at support@shamanvisionarycircle.com. I think we've answered 800 tickets so far. So we had one person give us 300 tickets. That was a joke. but we're pretty responsive, and we'll help you sort through any technology issues. The other thing I want you to know is, we're on a system called Kajabi, which is where we're placing all of the recordings. And you may not know this, but if you go to the Apple Store on your iPhone, you can download an app. And you can download the Kajabi app. And on your phone, you can literally get all of the access to all of the recordings and everything we put inside the membership site. So that's really cool. So if you're traveling or you want to listen to the journey on your mobile phone, you can just download that. And the last announcement is, Hank and Jill have a new mic and a new camera. That are on their way to be delivered, unfortunately, today. So they will have that probably next week. And we got the best quality that we can get for them. And they're also in the process of upgrading their internet speed. So we're just going to keep improving their quality of the recordings and the teachings. With that, I'm going to pass it over to our esteemed wisdom teachers, Hank and Jill. Welcome. We have Jill tonight, and have them take over to manage the session. One last announcement: how the session will go is, they're going to do a teaching, then we're going to do a 15-minute journey instead of a 20-minute journey, and then we'll come back after the journey, and they will do a little bit more teaching. And then the place to put your journey is into the Facebook group, or you can also place it below the video in the member site, and that's where the communication. After I think 8 or 9 of the sessions, we will have a dedicated Q&A where you can ask questions for them. But we're trying to keep these sessions to about an hour each time. So take it away, Hank and Jill. Thank you.
Thank you, Don Ricardo. That's nice. We'll start with just a little bit of rattle to invite our non-ordinary friends to join us, with your permission.
Good.
Well, welcome back, and we're going to have an interesting day today, with my lady Jill sitting in as well. an interesting journey for you as well. And we're still working on your foundation for your spiritual practice. This is especially important for those who are new to this tradition. Basically, in creating the foundation, we're looking at the foundation stones. Last time we talked about animism, the understanding that everything in nature has a personal supernatural essence or soul. And this came from an individual who was investigating the phenomenon of religion almost 200 years ago. So tonight we're going to be focused on the field of power. And this word animatism, which most of you have seen by now, it was originally coined by a man named Moret, R.R. Moret, in a book he published back, believe it or not, in 1909. But you can pick up more recent editions of this if it's something that you would find interesting. The book is called The Threshold of Religion. And in this book, he claimed that, you know, he was sort of working the same crowd as the, who was the guy we talked about last week?
You'll have to be more clear than that. We talked about a lot.
Yeah. Well, Moret.
Moret, yes.
He claimed that there was a belief that preceded the belief in the soul. He felt that the soul was too sophisticated a belief for primitive people to have come up with. Yeah. So he said that their belief, which he called animatism, is the belief in an underlying field of power or force that infuses everything everywhere and connects everything everywhere as well. And it's an animating force, which is where the word animatism comes from. And it's impersonal. It's not a personal supernatural force. It's an impersonal supernatural force, which is sort of spread out all over the place, but it can be especially concentrated in certain objects, in certain people, in certain places. And these usually become people of power, objects of power, and localities where you can connect with power in a strong way. Now, some examples of this. This is a, I might add, a belief which is held dearly by modern mystics, the belief in this underlying field of force. And of course, it's also connected to the fact that each one of us has a physical body here, an energy body, which is also here and us, all around us, as well as a spirit body there. And we're going to go there, but not today. Well, maybe we will. Examples of this underlying field of power. One of the most well-known examples would be the Polynesian and Melanesian concept of mana. Now, mana. This is an invisible force that can be transmitted through touch and may be harnessed for either good or not good, according to the intentions of the practitioner. This mana is analogous to what the Chinese call qi and what the Japanese call ki. It's the same. It's the same thing. Now, supernatural power is highly concentrated in living beings, in things, in objects, and it can affect anybody who comes into contact with it. Now, I might add here, in talking about mana, that mana is also related to your personal status, I guess you could say, in society. And they would look at somebody like Halemakua, who is just loaded, you know, and say, oh, here's a man who's really connected with power, filled with power, mm-hmm. But an unusually swift canoe, a strange shaped stone in a garden, which is very prolific in what it's producing. or an individual who has special abilities. All of these individual things and people would be infused with this stuff called mana. And you know, almost everybody has a concept of it. Almost everyone, it's virtually a universal concept. For example, the Amerindian peoples around the Great Lakes, the Ojibwa, the Fox, the Hurons, the Mohawks, you know, they all had this underlying spiritual awareness of what they called the Manitous. Now, I've got a great quote about the Manitous, and I'm going to do something I usually don't do, and I'm going to read it to you, but I don't even remember where I got it. I used to use it in my academic class to impress people. Here we go. The most sacred art form of all the Algonquian people were representations on natural stone surfaces of spirits seen by the most powerful shamans in the form of pictographs and petroglyphs. Now, this tells you something about rock art, because I think that this statement could hold for rock art virtually everywhere from the Ice Age on down. Such rock writings render visible the great Manitou spirits, which only the shaman can see and control. Now, this means that these underlying transpersonal forces reside in trees and rivers and rocks and mountains and clouds and in the rain and in the air. It's everywhere. Among the Ojibwa, and I know that I have an Ojibwa friend, a Facebook friend, so I've got to be careful what I say. Okay. The most powerful of all the Manitou is the great lord of the universe called Kichi Manitou, spelled with a K. Kichi Manitou, the great spirit or lord of the universe who is said to be invisible in form, little more than a sublime abstraction, vast, undefined, and unfixed. As in many other cultures, the great spirit of the Ojibwa was symbolized by the image of the sun, which when you think of it, is a dense concentration of energy, which is constantly producing the life force, and for free, for everything and everyone in its system. The great spirit of the Ojibwa was symbolized by the image of the sun. And if a shaman, a medicine woman, medicine man, had a vision in a dream or trance state of the sun, he was considered most bountifully blessed and counted among the most powerful shamans. Now, this concept of Kichi Manitou is interesting because, as many of you know, when the Christian missionaries first invaded, you could say, the Great Lakes region and took up residence with the traditional people, they tried to create a new religion, which was based on their religion, yeah, and replace the indigenous tradition. And so when the missionaries asked the Indians about the spirits, about the Manitou spirits, the Ojibwa and the Fox and the Hurons and so forth and so on, the Haudenosaunee, they gave the missionary the whole spread. These were the Jesuits. And the Jesuits told the Indians, but is there a great Manitou which is above all the other Manitou? And they said, yes, Kichi Manitou. And the Christian priest said, well, that's what we
then program.
This is analogous to the God. What do I hear?
Something coming through the computer. Just keep going.
Okay. Now, this brings up a rather tricky thing to talk about. But, you know, there was never really a concept among the Indian cultures in North America of a great spirit. I was told this by Paula Gunn Allen, who was the director of Native American Studies at Berkeley years ago. She said that before 1850, there virtually was no concept of a great spirit or a great creator. This actually came about through Christian missionary activity, who promoted K'iche' Manitou as the great spirit, as God, analogous with the Christian God, of course. And it sort of fulminated in the Great Lakes region for about 150 years. And then it spread through cultural diffusion very rapidly across North America. And so today, when you speak with Indian people, the concept of the Great Spirit or the Creator is part of their logos, is part of their cultural logos. So please don't quote me as having revealed this to you, but I found it just fascinating because it's a good example of cultural change. And I guess the time was ripe for it to do so. Now, virtually all people have a concept of it. Roman Catholics, for example, you know, we all know about the healing power of saints and relics of living saints. We all know about places like Lourdes in southern France and about the young woman, was it Bernadette, who, you know, had the vision in that grotto, that underground grotto at Lourdes. You know, any day you go to Lourdes, 365 days a year, there are literally hundreds and hundreds of people in wheelchairs, on walkers, on crutches, with caretakers, hoping for a cure, because there have been, I think, over 100 bona fide miracles which have been validated by the Catholic Church, healing miracles which have happened in response to being in this place. This would be a very nice example of a place with high concentrations of mana. This is animatism. Now, this also brings up an interesting story, which I'll share with you quickly. When John and I lived in Sacramento, we knew a professor at Sac State, Sacramento State, and he told us this interesting account about a man he knew who was an architect, who had a very special relationship with sacred architecture. And every year or two, he and his mother, his aging mother, would travel together in Europe, and he'd spend the day in a beautiful, you know, 12th century, 13th century church, and she'd play the tourist and go and shop and, you know, have a nice lunch and so forth and so on. And they really enjoyed each other very, very much. They were very close. And so they would do this at least, I think, once every other year. I think that was the way it worked. Well, apparently the time came for their biannual trip, their yearly trip. And the mother had problems walking. And so she went to her physician and they did the test. And as it turned out, he said to her, "We're going to take you into the hospital tonight. You have a very advanced form of cancer." And she said, "No, you're not. I'm going to Europe with my son on Monday." And he said, "I don't think you understand, Mrs. So-and-so. This is very serious." And she said, "Listen, I don't think you understand either. This is maybe the last time I go to Europe with my son. And on Monday, I'm flying to Europe with my son." Well, you know what these older gals are like when they come into their power.
Yay.
So off they go to Europe. And she agreed to come to the hospital immediately when she returned to the United States. Well, they started their tour and they were having the time of their lives. And she was happy because she was with her son, and he was happy because he was with his mother. And as the doctor had predicted, the disease began to spread rather rapidly. So after the first week, I think she was on crutches. The second week she was on a walker. And the third week she was in a wheelchair. Now, it was about that time that they arrived at a very special place in Austria near Munich, which is called Kirch am Wiese. That means church in the meadow. Visa is W-I-E-S-A, I think, or S-E, Visa. The church in the meadow, this is a very strange church, and it's right in the middle of a great circle surrounded by forest, and the meadow is all clear. And I have never seen this place myself, but I was told that it's kind of like a surreal church in the sense that you can imagine paintings of the saints and sages and Jesus and Mary on the walls of the church. And then imagine sort of taking the arms and legs off mannequins and store windows and fastening them to the wall. So it actually sees like these spirits, these holy people are actually coming through the wall and into the spirit, into the church. Now, they arrive at this church, and it's a weeknight, a weekday, so everything is open, but very few people are there. So he unloads all of his drawing equipment and the wheelchair, and he gets his mother into the church and helps her to settle into a pew for the day, and they had brought some lunch with them, and he got out his draftsman's implements to make drawings, architectural drawings. And they spent a day together in this church. Now, something very interesting happened. At the end of the day, as the light was fading and he was preparing to get everything back in the car, you know, he took his drafting materials and put them back in their rental car. And then he went back for his mother with a wheelchair. And she literally walked back to the car without the wheelchair. Now, as many of you may know, the early Christians in the Dark Ages often built their churches on pagan places of power, where there were dense concentrations of manna in the soil, in the ground, in the trees, because this was a guarantee that the pagan people would come to the church, whereas they used to just go to the sacred meadow where various ceremonies and rituals would be held, including healing rituals. So she walks back to the car virtually unassisted. And from that day forward, until the time they returned to the United States, she got better and better. First, the wheelchair was discarded. Then the walker went, and then the crutches went. By the time she came back, she was barely using a cane. Now, this brings up something very interesting. Neither one of these two people had expressed any intention for healing and going to this place. But if this place, in fact, is a healing locality, which is loaded with power, the power worked anyway, without any request, any ritual, any ceremony, just exposure to this place, which that had dense concentrations of power in it, was all that it took. And of course, the mother and the son researched this and decided that it was because of the fact that the church had been originally built on a place of power. And if any of you ever go there, I would be delighted to receive photographs through Facebook or the emails, because I've never actually seen this place, but I would dearly love to. Now, another interesting concept is found in the Islamic world, and I'll just mention it briefly. There's a concept of something called baraka, B-A-R-A-K-A. Reminds me of the name of a certain president who was one of our greatest, baraka. And baraka is kind of identified with this power and with holiness. And a person could acquire baraka by going to a place where a holy man had walked, by touching the holy man's clothes, by touching the great stone in the center of Mecca, from which Muhammad, I think he either stepped up into heaven from there or he taught from there. It has a name, but I can't think of it right now, but it's quite impressive. Baraka. Then, of course, there are the Bushmen. Remember that silly film, The Gods Must Be Crazy, with the African guy who had a click in his language? That's Khoisan, actually. And the is actually like a letter in the alphabet. For example, I was trying to think of an example the other day, and I found the word for root of a plant. It's called kabasa, kabasa. And they have various clicks. I think they've got three clicks. Anyway, the Kung Bushmen have a tradition of doing a trance dance. What happens is a fire is built in the center of their camp, because they're hunter-gatherers, they're foragers, they're constantly moving, following the animals that provide them with everything. And a fire is built, and then all the women in the camp sit around the fire, and they sing songs and clap their hands rhythmically to attract a supernatural force or power, which is called Kung. I'm getting pretty good at it. Kung. You would spell that apostrophe N-U-M, like the Kung sign, apostrophe K-U-G, K-U-N-G. The Kung sign people. Now, in the Bushman universe, the most powerful thing is a boiling energy that originates from the spirits. And the trance dance is held to do healing work, especially for individuals in need. And all the men dance in a circle. As I recall, it was a counterclockwise circle around the women who were singing and clapping. And when the appears, the one it affects goes into deep trance and is in danger of falling. But the men who are dancing behind him catch him, and they lead him out of the circle and lie him down on the ground. And it's in this state that often they shudder and shake, like they're having a seizure. And so they stroke the individual, sometimes with feathers. And when the individual has got control of the num, healing takes place. And the shamans use their hands to extract illness-causing intrusions out of the person's body. Now, although I'm talking about men doing the trance dance, women do it also, but they'll only do it with other women. They won't do it in the presence of men, because although they're minimally dressed, when they fall down and go into trance, their skirts fly up and they're very modest. They're not going to do this in front of the men. So you see this in rock shelters in South Africa, where you'll see these images, these petroglyphs and pictographs of individuals dancing along a red line. And that red line is the red line of power. It's the red road of the Amerindians as well. And they say, of course, in Indian culture, that once you're on the red road, there's no getting off. You're in it for forever, for lifetime after lifetime as well. Now, in the Western world, our concept of this power is often focused in the idea of good luck. Good luck, that's about power. You know, and we have this affection for and attraction for objects which we feel will convey that good luck to us. Like an object that has dense concentrations of energy in it and, you know, which you feel attraction for and a relationship with. I could say also the horseshoe over the door. Mm-hmm. That's an image of good luck. That rabbit's foot on the keychain. Now, what does a rabbit's foot do on your keychain? You know, when I was a kid, everybody had a rabbit's foot. I haven't seen one in, 30, 40 years. Rabbit's foot on the keychain. Power objects, pendants. Now, as a lead-in to our journey, which Jill is going to bring us toward, I would just observe that this belief in supernatural or force and its ability to reside in objects, people, and places is probably universal. And as such, this power is accessible to us in this place of power and healing that Jill and I have tried to lead you into last week, called the Sacred Garden. And of course, the helping spirits have a role in this. So, Lady Jill.
Uh-huh. Well, the journey we're proposing today is one where you will return to the garden or wherever in nature you found yourself and you felt comfortable. Look around, see if anything has changed. And at the next point, you want to call in a helping spirit. We're specifically asking you to use that word, helping spirit or spirit helper, to come and join you in your garden. Well, this is actually reinforcing one of the tenets of using shamanic methods, and that is a relationship with a spirit. And as this spirit presents itself to you, then welcome it and introduce yourself and ask if it is in fact your helping spirit. Now, there's a chance where it may indicate it's not. Don't be thrown by that. Just simply ask, can you point me in the direction of or take me to my helping spirit? And usually there is an outcome where you're in the presence of your true helping spirit. And when you're in connection with it and you've made your introductions and you have a sense, you can ask it, how are you going to be of service to me? And there may be some specifics or a beginning of an understanding that comes with that. And then ask it for advice or direction or information or an experience of what it's like to have access to this kind of power, this energy that Hank's been talking about. Because one of the benefits of having a helping spirit is that it can in fact train you to manage the power and the energy appropriately. You know, you think about these helping spirits are often offering you support. There's even moments where they'll offer you protection. But there is another role that they play that has to do with this power and how it can in fact benefit you in helping to bring up your own power or accessing the power to do something else, for example, in a healing mode. So this spirit's very important to get you going in the management and the use of power appropriately. So that is the journey today.
You know, I just add here that for the shaman, the name of the game is power. The more power, the more access to power that you have, the more you can do. And this is often when the miracles happen. You know, Jill and I have been living for the last 25, 30 years, going from retreat center to retreat center doing trainings. And I could say that we have resided in the realm of the miraculous almost every time. And every time, especially in a healing ritual, miracles would happen. And we'll talk more about this when we talk about spirit medicine in a future module. But it would be very good now to connect either with the spirit who came to you last week in your garden or someone you encountered over the week in between. Or you might ask specifically for a spirit who can manage power and instruct you or give you the experience of what it's like to have access to this energy. So now we'll turn it over to our great wizards to bring up the drum, the 15-minute drum. And I would suggest that everyone return to their garden, observe your garden carefully, see if anything has changed since the last time you were there. And if so, what do you think that change indicates? Because you remember that everything that makes up your garden is symbolic of some aspect of yourself or some aspect of your life experiences. So let's see what comes today. And do take notes, take some shorthand notes, and then do some journaling afterwards. So let us fly.
Okay, what I'm going to do is shift the screen over to an image. And I can see the more everybody's getting on their face mask or lying down. I'm going to play the audio. This is a 15-minute track. Last week we had 20. And I've done a few things to improve the audio. If it's not good for you, then the other option is for you to play the track, or you can actually do drumming or rattling by yourself. So I'm going to go ahead and shift the screen over now. Have this wonderful portal here. And I'm going to play in about 5 seconds here. I'm going to get this going for us. Okay. And at the end of the track, if you're new to this, at the beginning it starts, and at the end there's a callback rhythm. And that means come back, and Hank's, you'll notice the difference in Hank's rhythm at the end of this, of his drumming as well. Thank you. Okay, it's back over to you, Hank and Jill.
It's us. It's back to us. Go ahead.
It would be good now to return the focus of your conscious awareness to your physical body. And just quickly refresh and restore what you've just experienced. If you have a journal, you might take a few moments to make some shorthand notes, which you can fill in more detail after our session comes to closure today. But in the meantime, going over once again everything that you've perceived, just running it through to make sure you've got it. You know, this is a way of sharpening the vision. I might also share something with you. Those of you who've read the Spirit Walker trilogy are aware of my deep trance experiences in which I found myself connected with the mind, soul, and body of another man. And at the onset and closure of each one of these trance experiences, which lasted for variable amounts of time, I would perceive these strange visions of lines of light, like a spider web or a net. And if I've got this right, and I believe I do, this may be actually the way in which the invisible web of power manifests itself. I wonder if anyone else in this journey had the experience of seeing a web or a net. This is what the Hindus call the net of Indra, by the way. And the Hawaiians called it the Aka field, AKA. We're going to talk about the Hawaiians and the Hawaiian perspective, but not today. They called it the Aka field. Aka is a word in Hawaiian which has many meanings according to how it's used. But in this case, it can be, it can mean something like a shadow or a reflection. And they believe that everything everywhere is connected to everything else through this field of power, which they call Koko Aka. Koko Aka. Now, I wonder if I actually dropped something during the drumming. Did that come through?
No, Richard? We were muted.
We were muted.
Yeah, we were muted.
That's good news. Well, it's, you know, it's hard. When I'm listening to myself drumming, I start to vibrate. And I had to bring this under control so I could actually operate in the altered state of consciousness. And we're going to talk more about the altered states of consciousness, but not today.
Do you want to mention something about next week?
The week to come. Mm-hmm. Well, as part of the foundation upon which you're going to or already have built your spiritual practice, I'd like to say something from an anthropological perspective about the various types of spiritual practitioners. Shamans, we're going to talk about the shaman in some detail. We're going to talk about medicine people and how they're the same, yet sometimes different. We're going to talk about trance mediums, in which the trance medium embodies spirits who come to them and possess them, and are able to convey information and healing and all sorts of things through the body of a borrowed person. And then, of course, we have to talk about priests. And in addressing these four types of spiritual practitioners, we'll try to say, you know, how they're similar to each other, as well as how they're different from each other. As well, they have qualities and abilities that distinguish them from each other. And we'll talk a little bit about that next week. And Jill will cook up a nice journey for you, maybe. Yeah, to go in that direction. Yeah. So Ricardo, do you have any insights? Anything interesting happened for you during the drumming?
Nothing that I'm prepared to share right now, but I did want to share a picture of the church in the meadow, which is has a modest interior, I might add. I just did a quick Google of it because I was kind of curious right after you said that. So I just thought I would share the inside of that church for everybody to see because it's quite interesting. And that is the inside of the Church of the Meadow. I was picturing like a log cabin-y kind of thing. But this is not a log cabin-y. It's a fairly ornate church outside of Munich. And I will post this into the Facebook group. So you can, and I'll post a link to where you can see the outside of it. But it's pretty extraordinary. It has a huge history. So people make a pilgrimage to this church. It's a fairly
ornate. Look how they've brought in the trees. They've brought nature into the church.
Right.
Which is not often done.
So I thought that everybody would find that very interesting, given the story you said earlier.
Wow. Thanks for that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Maybe you could post it on the Facebook
page.
That's
what he just said, sweetheart.
Then I'll steal it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll borrow it.
Okay, we're getting more efficient. We have 2 minutes to go here. I'm going to switch everybody over to screen view on my computer, and I can see everybody's amazing faces. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And same time, same place next week. I've got a child in there, too. It's great. So yeah, thanks for joining us. And thanks for joining us, Jill, for this first time. And with a little luck, we'll have the new mic up and everything next time. So they'll be even better quality.
Okay.
And I'm going to unmute everybody. Can somebody unmute everybody? And we'll say a warm aloha and goodbye, mahalo. Everybody is unmuted now.
Aloha.
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 Jai Sonki Chai.
He's muted again. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week. Lots of love. Bye-bye.